Good morning. It is time to get up with the Lakers, who might need to give up on their season. Another devastating loss, and now LeBron is hurt. What a mess. Meanwhile, Tata, Tyreek, without their game breaker, are the Chiefs really still contenders in the tightest division in football history? We'll take you there. Plus, as the clock strikes midnight on Cinderella, we get a matchup for the ages and an unprecedented Final Four. All that and more as we get up with you on a Monday, starting right now. I am back and better than ever. I am by myself, but by no means alone. Take a look at the squad we put together today. We're talking football. Orlovsky, Teddy Bruschi, Dominique is ready to go. And Tim Legler checking in on last-minute notes, trying to figure out how the Lakers are going to work their way into the playoffs after another devastating defeat last night. LeBron and the Lakers taking on the Pelicans, who they could easily see in the play-in. Now pick us up in the second quarter. Just keep an eye on LeBron here. Don't ignore the ball. Watch LeBron going down as he's battling Jackson Hayes for a rebound, and LeBron will roll the ankle. In fact, if you look at it closely, it looks pretty bad for LeBron, who would stay in the game, candidly still have a monster night, but it's a painful injury, and we'll talk more about it as we go. Meanwhile, we're later in the first quarter, and LeBron would go, did I tell you he played well? He's knocking down threes from everywhere. There's one. Here's another showing your range. He made six threes in the first half. That ties his career high for any half in any game. LeBron had 25 at the break, and the Lakers were up by 20. All good, right? Wrong. Later in the third. Remember, the Lakers have been up by as many as 23. Now it's a five-point game. Now here's Trey Murphy. Now it's a three-point game. Murphy had 21. New Orleans down just four going to the fourth. Over 3 minutes to go now. Pelicans are up by two. Brandon Ingram working in the post. How good is that kid? He had 26. New Orleans up by four. 30 seconds to go. Pelicans. CJ McCollum. Oh, it's a goaltend. LeBron goes up and gets it. Doesn't like the call. A lot of things for him not to like. LeBron James would score 39, but the Pelicans come all the way back to win. LeBron, what?
It feels like I mean, excuse my language, but that's what it feels like. You know, I came in with the mindset, understanding it was a playoff type, it was going to be playoff type atmosphere, playoff implications and things of that nature. So, I knew that from the jump. We also got a lot of guys on our ball club that haven't played in playoff games as well. That plays a lot of big minutes for us. You know, it feels like a wasted opportunity, obviously, for myself and for our team, and we weren't able to get it done.
All right, so Timmy Legler, so if I had told you before the year LeBron James is going to be averaging 30 points a game and his team would be in 10th place at the end of March and only a game away from falling out of the play-in, what would you have said to me?
Honestly, Greeny, if you asked me that exact question, my response would have been, LeBron James is averaging 30 points a game. I think of everything that you put into that statement, that's the most surprising thing because no player's ever done this. At 30 years old, I'm sorry, 37 years old, to be averaging 30 points a game, he's the oldest guy by a mile to put up these kind of numbers at this age. So I would have said, well, what's going on with the Lakers if LeBron James has to be this dominant as a scorer? Because we know that's not really how he thinks. I know for a fact LeBron James would much rather average 16 points a game, and they're a three seed in the Western Conference. So to me, just by the mere fact that LeBron James is putting up these scoring numbers, if I didn't watch a single game all year and you told me that, I would have known this team is in deep trouble because you cannot put that kind of burden on a player at this stage of his career. So it's been shocking, and I think the biggest thing for me when I watch this team, Greeny, they just don't look like they really have a lot of fun. And this has been an absolute grind the entire season, and now it's slipping right through their fingers. And the possibility they could be home when the play-in actually starts. That, to me, completely unthinkable, a roster with LeBron, Russell Westbrook, and AD going into the season.
Yeah, and we can put, Cindy, we can put the remaining schedule up on the screen here if you want to take a look at it. I mentioned they're only one game clear, as we discussed, of San Antonio. So what do you think here? 2 weeks from the play-in, it's 2 weeks from this week, Tuesday and Wednesday, is when those will be played. What do you expect to happen for them here when LeBron and company legs?
Well, Greeny, if you just looked at the schedule and saw those names of those teams, you'd say they have no shot, right? They don't have the tiebreaker with San Antonio. New Orleans is now past them. But here's the thing. You don't know, looking at these teams right now, who is going to be playing as the season winds down. Because, look, a lot of these teams are involved in tight matchups for seeding and whatnot. Some teams just trying to get in. But at the same time, when you get into the last week of the season, there's a great possibility that some of these teams have their spot locked in, which means they might rest some stars. So it's really tough this time of year to just predict based on the name of the team that that's an automatic loss for the Lakers. I think some of this is going to be determined by who is playing on those given nights, but it certainly doesn't look good. I think right now there's a better chance the Lakers are sitting home when this whole thing starts than there is that they advance out of the play-in.
Remarkable, and our analytics said the same thing a moment ago, right? So, like, stay close. Something happened in the NBA last night that had not happened all year long. We'll show you what that was a little bit later. But let me get my football guys in here because I've been away for a week and a lot has happened. So let's catch up on what some of these were, and let's make sure I know what it is that mattered here. So, Teddy Bruschi, I will start with you. Matt Ryan got traded to the Colts. What should I be thinking about that?
Well, you got to be thinking now, what can the Colts do with Matt Ryan? Matt Ryan's an aging quarterback that just started to show a little bit of a slip down there in Atlanta. Now, he's got a great offensive line with a running back that can do special things. So just do smart things, hand the ball off, work the play action, let that defense that's so great at taking the football away, let them play too. Matt Ryan could be in a great situation.
Another interesting quarterback move, Dan Orlovsky. What about Deshaun Watson getting traded to Cleveland? What does that mean?
That the Cleveland Browns have a quarterback that can win them a Super Bowl now. He's as good as anybody in the NFL, and I think it's very similar to what the Los Angeles Rams decided or thought of when they were going to move on from Jared Goff. They needed to get better when the run game wasn't dominant. They needed to have a quarterback that could play drop-back football. And then on third down, can you go above the X's and O's? They have their answer in Deshaun Watson.
And then Dominique, the huge trade last week, the Chiefs trading Tyreek Hill to the Dolphins. What's the number one thought there?
Yeah, I think if I'm a Chiefs fan, it's counterintuitive, but I'm excited, honestly. You don't get better by getting rid of Tyreek Hill, but I think it shows that your organization is smart and planning for the future, because there's only so much you can do when you have your cap tied up in two players. And had they signed Tyreek Hill to the same contract, it'd be $75 million a year for Hill and Mahomes together. It's going to be real hard to win a championship that way. They've gotten some draft picks, which I think will set them up to find some discounts elsewhere.
All right, I want to hear what the rest of our crew has to say about that. But first, let's hear together what Andy Reid had to say about it. He is meeting with the media literally as we speak at the owners' meetings down in Florida. This is what he said about trading away Tyreek Hill.
We did try to sign Tyreek at a certain cost. Once it gets past that, now you can see what we're doing here with the players we brought in. And we feel they're very good football players. So we'll see. I mean, the end result is going to be what takes place during the season, but Brett's building this thing back to where we feel comfortable so that we can go win on Sundays.
All right, so that's what Andy said, and as always, I approve of his wardrobe. But I just want to make sure I'm clear, Dominica, what you just said. Did you just suggest that a Chiefs fan should be feeling optimistic and happy about their team trading away the most explosive individual player in the National Football League?
Yeah, I mean, they should be disappointed that they're losing Tyreek Hill, but in order to win in this league, you're going to have to find discounts, which normally happens in the draft. And they know that in order to get to hit on draft picks, you need several draft picks because you're not going to be able to be right every time. And honestly, you're probably wrong more times than you're right. So in order to build this thing long, I think the person you need to be talking to is Teddy Bruschi. He's the Patriots, the only team that have been able to kind of rebuild on the fly and put together dynasty after dynasty after dynasty. And they've done it by trading guys that were still productive, not trading guys after they're spent.
So, Teddy, how about that? The idea of moving on from a guy a year too early rather than a year too late? Is that what this is?
Yeah, absolutely. Nick is right. I mean, long term, it's a great move. You can't pay both of them. And I don't know about being excited about it. I don't know how many fans understand sort of salary cap implications and draft picks and how you parlay them into better players. But all they see now is one of the most explosive players gone. And I just think this offense is going to be different. Give me a Marquez Valdes-Scantling and Juju Smith-Schuster in a game plan meeting. And it's like, okay, we got this, guys. I mean, but if you have Tyreek Hill, you're walking into that as a defensive coordinator and defensive players like, okay, how do we deal with the biggest headache there is in the National Football League in Tyreek Hill? It's going to be different. So as you transition and you get new receivers and you get new draft picks in there, so can Patrick Mahomes be someone like a Tom Brady, which is Nick is talking about because he's comparing it to the Patriots here, that you can take whoever you put out there and I'm going to be able to do that. But here's something. I mean, Patrick Mahomes has thrown 26 plus 40-plus yard touchdowns in his career. 13 have gone to Tyreek Hill. And I would argue about 7 or so of those are because of Tyreek Hill on the other side. That's the element that is not there anymore. So Patrick Mahomes has to learn to play without this explosive player.
Mm-hmm. So, Orlovsky, let me then come to you here before I yell at our friend Dominique a little bit. The Chiefs are playing in the best division in pro football history. They just traded away, besides the quarterback, probably their best player. Are they still the team to beat in that Western division?
Sure. I'll tell you this. I think the Chiefs can take solace in three things. They still have the best coach in that division. They still have the best quarterback in that division. And they still have the best offensive line in that division. And that's why I don't get the whole, like, the Chiefs are done situation right now. I think the reality is this, Greeny. The Chiefs realized that their offense has been great. It just hasn't been great enough. They've won one Super Bowl over this four-year stretch that they've been absolutely lights out in offensively. And I said this last week, and I feel the same way today. This is a little bit of a philosophical change in this organization. We've got the best quarterback in football. We've got one of the, if not the best, offensive lines in football. When you have that, every other piece on your offense is going to be better than they actually are because of it. MVS is there. Juju Smith-Schuster is there. They've got two really good running backs there. Obviously, Travis Kelce's still there. 4 picks in the top 60 of the NFL draft, 5 in the top 100. The Chiefs are going to be just fine.
All right, we will see. You see, they've got plenty of receivers they could consider early in this year's draft, and we will go through some of these names here. I know there's one in particular, Dan, you have your eye on, but Dominique, just bookmark this conversation. We have to come back to it because there's another big difference between Teddy Bruschi and Tom Brady's Patriots and these Kansas City Chiefs. I'll just say, Mahomes better be twice as good as Brady was because he's getting paid twice as much as Brady ever did. We'll leave it on that thought for a moment. We'll continue as we roll on. Coming up, the Broncos went all in for Russ. So is it now Super Bowl or bust in that absolutely loaded AFC West? We'll answer that question. And Kyrie finally plays a home game, but it wasn't enough. Does last night reveal a fatal flaw in Brooklyn's game? We'll answer all your questions. We're getting up with you on a Monday on ESPN.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code PARLAY and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code PARLAY. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Get Up is brought to you by Verizon. Verizon is going ultra, so you can too. All right, yesterday the clock struck midnight on Cinderella right around tip-off time in Philadelphia. Carolina and St. Peter's in the Elite Eight. And this one, despite an extraordinary run by St. Peter's to get to this point, was no contest. That's Caleb Love knocking down a three. Carolina was up 18 early. Armando Bacot had an unbelievable game, 15 rebounds in the first half for the Tar Heels, who had a 19-point halftime lead. And then here's more from Bacot, 20 points, 22 rebounds for him. This one was really never a game. What a run for Doug Eddert and company in St. Peter's. They certainly have a lot to be proud of, but they're not going to the Final Four. These teams are. Seth Greenberg and I were just talking about it. They're the bluest of blood in this year's Final Four. Duke, Kansas, Villanova, and Carolina. And so here is my uncle Seth Greenberg, no relation. And, you know, we'll have all week to sort of preview these games specifically. But Duke, Carolina obviously jumps off the page. It's never happened before in the NCAA tournament, Seth. How do we explain how it is it came to be here?
Duke's playing like the best team in college basketball, a team that's going to win a national championship. It's just not their identity. It's how they're playing the game. Think about this, Greeny. Duke right now, they're averaging 41.5 points in the paint. They're living in the paint. 52% of their points come in the paint. They're shooting 70%. That's different. Jeremy Roach now, he has the ball in his hands. He's making plays, making the game easier, pressuring the ball, playing about 35 minutes a game. Mark Williams has been the most dominant big in the country. Now, Carolina fans, don't lose your mind. Armando Bacot's been great. But Mark Williams impacts the game at the rim defensively, offensively. He's finishing and rebounding the basketball. Duke's playing like a championship team that they are. I mean, you think about it. And to me, I have a philosophy on this, Greeny. I'd be interested in how you feel. Yeah. Duke's season doesn't start. It doesn't start until they get to the NCAA tournament. Because at Duke, you're judged by two things. Final Fours and national championships. And all that stuff with Coach K, Coach K's senior night, Coach K's last ACC tournament, Coach K's celebration, that's in the rearview window. When you get to the NCAA tournament, it's about the team, the team, the team.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable, but I can say the same thing to some degree about Carolina. And there was a moment in time this year where it didn't even look like they were going to make the tournament, and now they come in playing extraordinarily well, and they did beat Duke, of course, legendarily in Coach K's senior night. So who do you like in this matchup?
Yuri Davis done an amazing job, but I still like Duke, and it's real simple. Count the pros! I mean, Duke's got five first-round draft choices. I mean, every way you turn is going to be a guy that's going to be putting on a uniform and shaking the commissioner's hand. So, look, I love what Carolina's doing. I love how they're playing. I love the job that Hubert Davis does navigating the season, making the changes, staying the course, dealing with the adversity, the ball in R.J. Davis's hand. But it's real simple. Count the pros. I mean, if you look at this Duke team, you've got Banchero, you've got A.J. Griffin, you've got Moore, you've got Keels, you've got Mark Williams. Those are five first-round draft choices. And then you have Jerry Roach, who's playing 35 minutes a game. I mean, Hall of Fame coach, five national championships, a zillion trips to 14 trips to the Final Four, and then you have five pros. Come on now.
They're going to be very tough to beat. Again, the blood is awfully blue at this weekend's Final Four, and Uncle Seth will be here all week long to get us to it. Seth, thank you. I also want to mention that we are here at GetUp, brought to you in part by the McDonald's All-American Games. The Morgan Wooten Player of the Year Award is given annually to the best McDonald's All-American Games girl and boy who exemplifies outstanding character, exhibits leadership, and embodies the values of being a good citizen. And this year's winners are Kiki Rice of Sidwell Friends School in Washington, D.C., and Derek Lively, the second of Westchester, Pennsylvania. The McDonald's All-American Games returns to Chicago for its 45th anniversary Tuesday, March 29th. That's tomorrow. You can watch it here on ESPN. All right, back to the NFL we go. After 10 seasons in Seattle, as you know, Russell Wilson traded to the Broncos 3 weeks ago. Might have been the biggest move of this NFL offseason. Broncos general manager George Payton was asked about the move after years of searching for a franchise quarterback in Denver. Here's what he said.
I just think when you have a unique player, you go get him. And that's what we did. And, I'm not sure about the other teams, but it was a unique opportunity for us to get a franchise quarterback, and we did.
All right, so that's the situation in Denver there. And, Dan, it sort of makes you wonder. We just talked about Kansas City. We just talked about how incredibly good the AFC West is and how everybody got better. So what would constitute a successful season this year for Russell Wilson in Denver? Is it Super Bowl or bust?
It's not Super Bowl or bust. I think the divisional round of the playoffs is probably a really good accomplishment. I believe that it is a must-win tenure for Russell Wilson in Denver, but it's not a must-win season. Peyton Manning didn't win the Super Bowl in Denver till his fourth season there. But we all claim that it was an incredible accomplishment that he won that Super Bowl there. No one forgets no one remembers that they didn't win it in the first three seasons he was there. So I think that this is the most complete team in that division, given how good their defense is, how good their offense has the ability schematically to be. I don't get how some people are forgetting how good Russell Wilson is. This is a guy that four straight years has had a passer rating over 100, and only one of those seasons has thrown for double-digit interceptions, and he's never had this situation. So I think it's an incredibly difficult division and conference, but I want to see them get into the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah, Dominique, I mean, you played there in Denver, and you were the one all through the Aaron Rodgers saga. You kept pointing out how good that team could be if they got the right quarterback. How good are they now that they got this quarterback?
Yeah, I think they're championship good, but I don't think it's like win or bust for them right now, right? Because trading for Russell, he's young enough that this opens the window. This is not like a Tom Brady, which it seems like he may continue to play, but this is not just a Tom Brady, you add him and you must win immediately, because Russell's young. I do think that, to Dan's point, he has the potential or the ability, he's shown the ability to be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. He just hasn't done it for an entire season, and he hasn't done it in a recent season. So I think that gives us some pause, but all the help that he's going to have in Denver, I think, takes some of the pressure off of him. And they should win a championship. It's a disappointment if they don't win one while he's there, but I don't think they're expecting him to win one the first season.
How about it, Teddy? I mean, they have a first-time head coach, brand new there in that circumstance. Someone has to get left out in that division. You could argue any of the four teams. What's a successful year in your mind for Denver?
Yeah, I agree with you. Any of them could be left out of the playoffs here. That's why I see what Orlovsky's saying in terms of a divisional round, but you make it out of this division and just make it to the playoffs, I think that's a successful season. That's how tough I think the AFC West is going to be. If the Broncos can somehow prove that they're going to win this fist fight somehow and they get out of it somewhere. I mean, those games in week 16, 17, and 18, I mean, the certain bounce of the ball, and you could win the division. You could miss the playoffs. So they'll be playing playoff games, I mean, late in the year. So yeah, just getting out of that division is going to be a huge victory for them.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even see on that full screen with the odds, the Raiders, and very few teams added more than the Raiders did during this free agency period that just concluded. I will leave that there for the moment. We'll come back to it. We are jam-packed today. Coming up, it's put up or shut up time for Tua in Miami. Does our crew think he will live up to the expectations and the pressure now that they've made the big acquisition? We'll talk about it. Plus, the Nets come up short in Kyrie's first game back in Brooklyn. Was a fatal flaw in this team exposed? We'll answer that question next. Get up on ESPN.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We are back on Get Up, and earlier I told you you would see something we hadn't seen in the NBA all year, and here it was. Kyrie Irving getting set to play a home game in Brooklyn, and he was excited.
Oh, it feels good to be home. Oh, it feels good to be home.
So Kyrie Irving, after the lifting of the vaccine mandates in New York City, allowed to play, but it was LaMelo Ball who would steal the show from him. Look at Ball in the corner, knocking down a three. He would finish with 33 points, 7 of 12 from three. Kyrie started cold, then he started heating up a little bit in the fourth quarter of this game. That would make it a two-point game. And then the next possession for Brooklyn, look at the handles. Again, this is what Kyrie does better than anybody. He would finish with 16 points, just 6 of 22 from the floor. Now, here's where the game is decided. Less than 3 minutes, Hornets are up by one. This is Cody Martin, the one-foot three. And he knocks it down. They're up by four. Then it's a two-point game with a minute left, and it's Martin again showing you the range and grabbing the change. It is Charlotte that comes up big light, and they go on to win it, spoiling the party for Kyrie, 119-110. Kyrie, your thoughts?
We know where we are in the standings, and we also know how much talent we have in that locker room, what we're capable of doing. So though this may look like a loss that could have easily been a win column for us, we'll just take our bumps and bruises and move forward.
Well, the first thing he said is we know where we are in the standings. Let's make sure you know where they are in the standings. They're ninth. They are ninth right now, or tied with Charlotte, as you see there, but they lose last night to the Hornets. So it's a big game and a big moment there. Still 7 games left for the Nets to try and move up. Can they get themselves out of the play-in tournament? That seems unlikely. And so I come back to legs here for all of this. What should we take away from this? This is a night, if there was one game I was sure the Nets would win, it would be this one where Kyrie got the opportunity to play at home. What do you take away from the fact that they don't?
I look at it like a bad shooting night from Kyrie Irving because he was probably pressing Greeny. This had to feel a little bit strange to him actually playing a home game. That was an unusual environment for him. I think he was probably forcing the issue a little bit, and he had a rough night. And right now, the Brooklyn Nets have one formula to win games. Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving have to be great offensively because, one, they don't have a ton of help in their supporting cast, and two, they're not going to stop anybody. You don't string together stops right now if you're the Brooklyn Nets to win games. So you've got one formula. Those two guys have to be great offensively, and on this particular night, Kyrie was not. So, look, it's a bad loss considering the timing of the year and where they are and the pressure that's on them right now. But at the same time, if those two guys take the floor on any given night, at any time, including in a series or a play-in format, they've got a great chance because of the talent of their best two players. That's what it comes down to. You just didn't see it out of Kyrie last night, but I'm not going to put too much into it. He has been absolutely unbelievable here for about a month.
Yeah, I agree. Look, I've been saying all along that if the mandate got lifted, the Nets would be my team to beat in the Eastern Conference, and I will stay with that. Meanwhile, I showed you the bottom of the Eastern Conference playoff standings. Let me show you the top, because for the first time all season long, the Boston Celtics are now the one seed in the East. There they are sitting up there after an unbelievable after an unbelievable year. Candidly, going back to Christmas, they've been the best team in the NBA. They've won 22 of their last 25. So, legs, as we have gone through the East all year long, we've talked about every other team. It's time to start talking about the Celtics. Is this a legitimate championship contender?
Without question, you don't go 22-3 at this time of the year and not be considered a contender. I think for me, there's a few things I'm looking at with this team. The first is this. This is the best stretch of offense Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have played at the same time since they've been teammates. That's scary for the rest of the league because these are two multi-dimensional forwards with size, length. They can score from anywhere on the floor, and it's not looking like a your turn, my turn type of offense. They're actually playing well together collectively. The other thing that's really been a huge factor, they've gotten great production from their bench guards, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard. These guys have been tremendous. They're knocking down threes off of them. They've become one of the best defensive teams in the league. I think early on the jury was out a little bit. Not that we doubted Ime Udoka. We just needed to see him longer as the coach of this team. He's up on every possession. He's clearly got his stamp all over the way this team's playing. So there's no doubt the Boston Celtics are a legitimate title contender. That list of teams now has 5 in it in the East, and that's including Brooklyn. I'm not ready to think they have no shot with Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And then obviously Milwaukee and Miami are right there as well.
All right, we will see. I think Udoka has put himself very much into the coach of the year conversation as well. I want to show you one more thing from the NBA. Get me Neek in here, because let's do a little game of who did it better. So this was over the weekend. This is Andre Drummond is going to be sort of breaking away for an uncontested slam. And look, oh, he flashed the deuces. He gave him the Tyreek Hill deuces. Dominique, what do you think?
I love it, man. The big guy who doesn't have much speed shows us that speed kills in every sport, in every position. I love a little bit of taunting, especially to the Heat. They love, Tyreek Hill looks so comfortable. It's too easy for him. It's too easy for him.
What do you think, legs? Who did it better?
Yeah, I love it. Listen, I'm going to go with Drummond for this reason. That's very similar to when a defensive lineman, right, picks up a fumble.
Exactly.
Or they get a tipped interception at the line of scrimmage. And now they're rambling toward the end zone with a bunch of dudes trying to catch him. So I'm going to go with Andre Drummond to have the wherewithal to flash that In the midst of a play, by the way, he could easily dribble that thing off his foot after doing that. I give him a lot of credit because that took a lot of nerve in the open floor.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill is expecting that. Tyreek Hill expects that once a game. And Drummond never expects to do something like that. And to pull that out, it's impressive.
I'm with you. Yeah, and he did it, you know, against Miami, and now Tyreek Hill playing for Miami, and so there was some symmetry there. All right, get me Teddy Bruschi back in the conversation here, and let's do a new edition of Teddy Said Go. Teddy's got three things in his mind, and it starts in the NFC. Teddy, who's going to win the NFC this year?
All right, let's get it revved up, Greeny. I am going to go with the Los Angeles Rams. It was the Green Bay Packers a couple weeks ago, but you lose Tay, and then that just changes things for me. I think the Rams are the favorite. Matthew Stafford basically said last year, you give me a squad, I'll get you a ring. That's what he did. Courageous throws in the offseason. I really think the Rams have a great shot at defending their title. All right, let's go to these overtime rules, okay? The owners' meetings are down there. And listen, as much as I feel that defenses, you just got to stop people, I'm going to give the people what they want. I mean, both teams deserve a possession. I think that's the way it needs to be. Find a way to do that. And if not, just go ahead, look to college. All right, college has some great rules also. 25-yard line going in, put the ball down, and then let's go with that. So fix the overtime rules, hopefully, at these owners' meetings. Next thing, let's go finish with Teddy said, go with a little Tua talk. Could this be Tua's last game, last year in Miami? I'm telling you, if he doesn't do his best Patrick Mahomes imitation at times, okay, with Tyreek Hill, that new added weapon, it could be. Because he needs to find a way to push the ball downfield. If he can't show he can use all of these added weapons that they've given him, it's going to be very difficult for him. So that's my Teddy set go, and there's my deuces.
Okay, I like the deuces. I have to come back to the overtime at some point because, Teddy, I'm so delighted to have you on this program regularly here, and I admit to being intimidated by you enough, practically to the point where I would describe myself as afraid. But there are no words to describe how strongly I disagree on the overtime piece of this. So we'll come back to that. However, let's focus in on Tyreek and Tua for a minute. Dan Orlovsky, with Tyreek Hill on his team, what is Tua Tagovailoa now in Miami?
I think Tua becomes a top 12 player at the position. I just don't want people to expect him to become something that he isn't, nor has he ever been. And I know Teddy referenced, like, if he doesn't do his best Patrick Mahomes in moments, he's not Patrick. He's not going to be the guy that runs around and throws the ball across his body 40 yards. But I think that the Miami Dolphins with Tua and now with Tyreek Hill can become basketball on grass, and he just has to play elite-level point guard. I would tell you this, if I had to ask everybody at home paying attention and people on this show right now, what quarterback last year threw the ball at or behind the line of scrimmage most in the NFL? Who would you say? It's Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes threw the ball at or behind the line of scrimmage the most last year in the NFL. He just so happened to have Tyreek Hill. That's what's going to be this offense right now. And I get your point, Teddy, of saying like he's got to throw the ball downfield. And you know this just as much as anybody. I think there's two ways you throw the ball downfield in the NFL. You either have a freakazoid, a Julio Jones, a DeAndre Hopkins, where you can go, my guy better than your guy, I'm going to throw it downfield, or you've got to be phenomenal at the play-action pass. Mike McDaniel, new head coach, is going to be phenomenal designing stuff to create chunks in that play-action game. And I just think this offense is going to be basketball on grass with their speed and physicality on the offensive line now.
Go ahead, Teddy.
Yeah, Dan, there's a reason why Patrick Mahomes was so successful throwing the ball behind the line of scrimmage to those receivers. It's because there was the threat that he would throw it deep, and Tyreek Hill gave him that threat early on for Tua, okay? If he doesn't show at least any courage of using this weapon properly, all right, so it's all, I mean, Tua was, I mean, led the league. I mean, one of the quarterbacks, 10-yard completion, that's been his average, okay? Him and Ben Roethlisberger. So if it keeps that way, we can play tight defensively. If you don't show me early that you're willing to just throw that thing up or play calling, that you're going to take Tyreek Hill down the field and show that you can do that and threaten that, defenses are going to just tighten up to everything short.
But I can't throw the ball downfield if I've got a bunch of guys that aren't good on the perimeter that are slow and my offensive line stinks. Now that they've got the best offensive signing in free agency and speed, you'll see the ball go downfield a little bit more. I'm confident in that.
And they improved their offensive line also. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. Go ahead, Greeny.
What I was going to ask you, if someone watching this thing, observing this thing from a distance, were to say that the Dolphins, from the moment they took Tua Tagovailoa ahead of Justin Herbert, have literally done everything they can to try to justify that pick, taking Jalen Waddle in the first round last year and dramatically overpaying for Tyreek Hill this year, and all in trying to justify the fact that they took the wrong quarterback in the draft that year, what would you say in response?
I'd say Mike Greenberg is the only person saying that because it's foolish. Yeah. Like, I think to Teddy's point, Tyreek Hill makes everything easier, even if he doesn't catch one deep pass. Because as soon as he lines up on the field as a cornerback, I can tell you, I'm looking for my safety help. I'm getting deep. I'm making more space for Mike Gesicki. They're recreating what the Chiefs have out there in Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce with Gesicki and Hill. And then you add Waddle, who's also a game breaker. Like, we talk about Hill's speed and his downfield plays and all the, like, the improvising that he can do with Patrick Mahomes, but Tyreek Hill is also one of the quickest guys in the league. It's a rare combination of that speed and quickness, which means you can give Tyreek Hill a 4-yard pass and he might make it a 60-yard touchdown. Right. You know what that does for your QBR? It makes it go up really, really high, and it takes the pressure off your running attack. It takes pressure off defense. Yeah. It takes pressure off Gesicki. And it ultimately, most importantly, it takes pressure off of Tua. So I'm with Dan on this. I think this was a big signing. Maybe you could say that you overpaid, but it's not an overpay when you have a championship-level defense and a quarterback that could use some help. I think this team becomes very, very competitive. They're not going to win the Super Bowl because the AFC is tough, but I do think that we leave this season thinking that Tua is their quarterback.
Go ahead, guys.
This is the question then. Maybe the question is this, is that is Tua the type of quarterback that can properly utilize a weapon like Tyreek Hill? Yeah. And that's where
every quarterback can. There is no quarterback. There is no quarterback that
can.
There's no quarterback that can. And I think it's also a smart move for the Dolphins because we've seen this trend in the last several years where big time quarterbacks are moving. What's going to be in it? Let's just say, hypothetically, Tua does not work out. The next quarterback that wants to move, where is he going to want to go? To this best defense in football, just about, in an offense with all these weapons and a great play caller. So I think that no matter how
what
you slice
happened?
It, this was not a bad decision. I'm just saying that what to defend happened? The decision,
were...
there's no bad decision.
So you're ready for Tua to leave. So you're preparing for the next guy. So they're doing all of this, you're saying, for the next guy that's coming in.
No, that's not what I'm saying. You guys, man, I don't know at what point. It's an age thing. You get so old that you can't understand what we're saying. But me and my young friend, Dan Orlovsky, understand that this is going to work for Tua. But I'm saying, hypothetically, if it does not, there will be no more attractive destination next year for the next disgruntled quarterback that wants out of his situation. That's all.
Okay, Orlovsky, let me just throw this in a different way. Trading everything you just gave up and paying a wide receiver is something a team does because they are that player away from winning a championship. Are the Miami Dolphins close to winning a championship right now? If I wanted to make a list of all the teams in the AFC right now, and I just did, you could argue them anywhere between 7th and 12th in the AFC, and certainly not any higher. Does it make sense to trade your whole draft and pay that much money for a receiver for that team?
They didn't trade their whole draft, and they're a lot closer today than they were before this trade, Greeny. They didn't have a chance. All right, so he's the only guy on their offense that's paid. That's the only guy on their offense that is paid. That's why they're capable of doing it, because everybody else on their offense is relatively young and on a cheap contract, and now they've signed Armstead since this. They're closer than they were before this trade. I would have told you before the Tyreek Hill trade, they had no chance of winning this division. They had no chance of competing within this division. This team won 9 games last year, and 4 of those losses, they were 9-8. 4 of the losses were by a field goal or less. Tyreek Hill is going to close that gap for them. So I'm not going to sit here and tell you that they're bona fide Super Bowl contenders, but they have a significantly greater chance of competing within that division and then in the AFC than they did before this trade. I don't understand why you don't think this is a smart move by Miami.
All right, I'm getting yelled at both on and off the air. You guys are yelling at me, and the producer's yelling at me to go to a break. So let me listen to them real quick. We'll take a short break. We'll come back to this. As we continue, you will hear what the Giants owner said about his quarterback. That is everyone scratching their heads. That's on the way. This is Get Up on ESPN.
Tired of
ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to Amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's Amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back on Get Up in the NFL free agency period coming to its conclusion here. Let's see what these teams still need to do heading into next year. Teddy, what do your New England Patriots? Oh, sorry, Dominique, my fault. Dominique, what do the Cowboys need to do?
I think they have a surprising number of holes on this team, but the most important thing I think is they address the offensive line issues. When the Cowboys have been at their best, not just recently, but I don't know, all time, it's been because their offensive line has been not just good, but great. So I think rebuilding that offensive line to that great level is the most important thing they can do to protect their young quarterback.
Now to Teddy Bruschi and your former team, the Patriots. What do they need to do?
All right, fellas, let me help out my guy, Mac Jones, here. And just encourage them to get some help at the receiver position. Mac Jones, an accurate quarterback that'll also put that ball up for the receivers. They got to win combat catches. So to get him a big receiver, some speed on the outside, I think Mac Jones in his second year could do very, very well with another weapon out there.
I like it. And then finally, Dan Orlovsky. How about the Tampa Bay Bucks? What do they need to do?
Yeah, I think first figure out what Rob Gronkowski is going to do. And if he's going to come back, I assume that he will. But if he's going to come back, second of all, find out what Ndamukong Suh is going to come do if he's going to come back. And third, I still think the interior of their offensive line, mainly those guard positions, have to create some question marks. They've added some pieces, but it is not nearly the same unit as last year.
Okay, and so those are the teams that we see as being close. Then there are the Giants. While a lot of NFL teams spun the quarterback carousel this offseason, the Giants are standing pat, it appears, with Daniel Jones as he enters year four. And the owner of the team, John Mara, has been publicly supportive of Jones, and he doubled down on that over the weekend, saying, quote, "People are realizing it's by far the most important position in sports, and either you have one or you don't. We think we have one." A lot of people responded to that by saying, I'm sorry, what? Dan Orlovsky, I'll ask you that question. Do they have one?
He sounds like me with Carson Wentz 2 years ago.
do they have one?
No. With all due respect to Mr. Marin, no. Are we watching the same guys that I'm watching? You're going to tell me that you have one and then watch Josh Allen play or Lamar Jackson player, Patrick Mahomes, or Russell Wilson, or Matthew Stafford, or Tom Brady, or Aaron Rodgers, or Justin Herbert, or Joe Burrow. You're going to tell me you got one of those guys? Because what I'm going to tell you is you have a guy that turns the ball over every game. He started 50 games. He's got 49 turnovers. I understand he has been put in a bad situation. The situation ain't going to be that much better this year. And I think for them to expect that he is automatically or just out of the blue going to take this giant jump and fix all the stuff that has been his fatal flaw that hasn't been fixed, given the bad offensive line and bad skill talent around him, I think is silly. I think they're just trying to play the right game or the right public words, but they ain't got the same guys that I'm watching, man.
Speaking of Dominique, what jumped out to you?
Now, can we put the quote back up? Because, like, to me, the first phrase of it is what got my attention. I think he said, like, people believe or
people are realizing.
People are realizing. Like, that's the most obvious thing ever, that you need a quarterback in football. People also realize that water is wet. They also realize that the earth is round. Like, these are things people realize, that gravity is a thing. Like, these are obvious things that cannot be disputed. I'm surprised that John Mara said it like it's just a revelation. And the last thing is, when your head coach or team owner or general manager has to give you a vote of confidence in the press, it's already over. Like, it is already over. No one, although that laundry list of names that Dan Orlovsky just read, I promise you that no one's standing up saying, I think we got our guy. They don't have to say it because we know it. It's not a question. Yeah, Andy Reid, at his press conference this morning, he wasn't saying, well, I think we got one. A lot of people are realizing that you need a good quarterback. And I think we got one.
Let me get Teddy in here. Teddy, what do you think of all this?
I mean, Orlovsky said it best in terms of the 50 games and 49 turnovers. Defenses, I mean, all they're saying to themselves is when he throws it to you, catch it. And so people are also going to realize eventually this guy is not the guy. I think that unless he shows us something great this season, yeah. I mean, this is something the Giants are going to have to move on from.
Like, it's interesting to me. I would want to know, like, what has he seen that no one else has seen? Or, you know, like, why does he feel that way? I guess they got practice every day, and the young man is incredibly bright and great work ethic. And I'm not saying he's a bad player, but to sit here and say, we got one? Like, that's a feeling that there's no way he could have.
Right. I think Nick had it right. That's the kind of thing you only say when you know it isn't true. We'll take a short timeout. We'll continue in just a moment here. Huge hour on the way. The Lakers season is on the brink of complete collapse. Do they have any hope of turning things around? We'll answer that question next.